Our service today is a little different than usual. At the spot where I would usually offer a sermon, today I will instead address questions put forth from all of you. Note that I say address, not answer. There is a distinction. We do this once a year. I think of it as a celebration of questions, our willingness to ask them, to explore them, and sometimes simply to live with them. The process gives us all a chance to learn what's on the minds of folks gathered here, and it also provides some jumping off places for future services. Thanks to you for offering some questions for us to consider today, and my thanks to Ridge for sorting them into groups so that I have some chance of addressing a number of them. We have some like ones together. We have a couple of duplicates. That will make my life easier. Thanks very much. Somebody asked me, why don't I ask for the questions in advance? And I said, well, then I would be expected to actually prepare answers. This way, you know, reasonable expectations. So these questions that you have given me on index cards are divided into four piles. We'll do UU beliefs and history first, then happenings here at First Unitarian, then some questions directed at me, and then we'll end with theology. So let us begin. So, yeah. Is Unitarian Universalism a religious philosophy or a philosophical religion or both, or who cares? It is what you make it. Does that work? Well, it's an interesting thing because some of us, and this includes this diversity exists among my colleagues, consider Unitarian Universalism a religion. Some consider it a religious tradition, a movement. I think of it often as an approach to religion. You're more likely to hear me call it a movement than a religion, mostly because I think religion sometimes boxes us in, but I completely respect and understand that some people prefer to think of it as a religion. So I don't think we need to agree necessarily on one approach as far as that goes. I think we are not like many other religions. And one of the concerns that we have with a lot of what we call traditional religious language is that it connotates something in our culture that isn't necessarily what we mean. And so sometimes it's important for us to define our words. Marianne Horn, I think actually at this very moment, is running a class that she's going to do monthly this year on how do we understand traditional religious words and language in a Unitarian Universalist context. So you might want to look for her offering next month on that. Some might say Unitarian Universalism is a religion stripped of true faith. Do you see it that way? Why or why not? I don't think of it that way. I would say it's stripped of dogma, of creed, that we don't need to all say the same thing and believe the same thing. But more importantly, I would say it makes room for true faith. I think sometimes the recitation of creeds, the being indoctrinated can interfere with us searching our hearts for what we truly believe. Some people say, oh, Unitarian Universalism, that's that easy place where you can believe anything you want. And, you know, I actually find that in any faith tradition, you'll find people who are, as some have said, swimming in the shallow end of the pool. But I would argue that Unitarian Universalism is an invitation to go deep, if that's what you want to do. And we affirm a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And if you take that seriously, it's hard and challenging work. So no, I don't think it's stripped of faith. I think it is an invitation to faith. The next question is, traditional church membership and attendance is waning in this country. Can and will Unitarian Universalism fill the void? I hope so. Our numbers actually are going slightly up when most mainline Christian denominations are dropping, some of them precipitously. the largest, the fastest growing group of people in the in a religious survey in America right now are the nuns, the none of the aboves. And I suspect some of them are happy being nuns, but I think some of them would be very happy if they knew we existed. So, this week, mention us somewhere, because you may have a friend who's looking for us and doesn't know we exist. And so many people say, oh, I wish I had known you existed before. For years I was alone and I would have loved to know about Unitarian Universalism. But no, I won't actually mention it to anybody else. If we are happy to be here and think that this is a wonderful community and a gift to us, I feel we have some obligation to share it. We don't need to do it in a way that makes anybody feel guilty or bad, but we can do it as an invitation. Related in an interesting way is the move of the UUA headquarters from Beacon Street in Boston, where they've been for, I think, 75 years, to 24 Farnsworth Street in the Innovation District of Boston seems to be signaling much more than just a change in buildings. Could you comment on the move and the growing emphasis on technology? Let me just give a little background. For those of you not familiar, our Unitarian Universalist Association offices have been in Boston in a beautiful, rickety, rabbit warren of a building next to the Massachusetts State House, right on Boston Common. The very prestigious, if you will, address, 25 Beacon Street in the Boston area. However, increasingly, as Unitarian Universalism becomes more vibrant around the world, having a prestigious Boston address was not really all that important. And so there was the idea of moving. Now, they thought of moving the UUA headquarters out of Boston to be more accessible to the rest of the country. They would have had to change an incredible amount of staff to do that, because people did not want to relocate. So they chose instead to move a whole mile away in Boston, but to a very different part of town, into the innovation and technology area of the city. And the new building is set up to use more technology to be technologically state-of-the-art, but also to have open spaces. The old building, all the spaces were small. So this group was over in this department. They never saw the people that were over in this department. The new space will have a lot more room for collaboration, for informal collaboration as well as formal collaboration. And I think these signal important things about how we think about our movement, that the idea of collaboration, that we are not rugged individuals and we are not isolated congregations, that at every level we have something to be gained by being with others and by being in community and by using technology to make sure that our message gets to the greatest number of people who would appreciate it and benefit from it. So now we're moving on to 1U happenings. I would like more things behind you on the pulpit. Don't have any suggestions, but what do you think? I think that would be lovely. I lobbied for the tree. I do think we need more. I think we got the screen up, and we actually need to still make a little adjustment to the screen. And I think that we got a little bit slowed down waiting for the screen change so we can see what else we might add. But I would love to hear suggestions, although I shouldn't make any decisions about it, as I am not artistically inclined. I'm an art appreciator, but not qualified to make a decision. But let's talk more about that. Here's one we can dispense with quickly. The web says that Religion 101 is on Monday, October 21st. The paper says, update says it's the 22nd. Always on Tuesdays. So the paper is correct. Sorry about the web mistake. I'll look for that and try to find it. What do you see for us in the next 5 years? Us, I'm going to assume, is First Unitarian. As some of you have heard, we're looking at some changes to our facility here. And part of the reason that we're looking at that is that we're imagining into the future being more and more connected to the larger community. Both the ability for us to get out of our building and off our campus, out into the community more, making a difference with our values, living out our values, but also being able to invite the community in. The congregation has a long and proud tradition of being a place where progressives and liberals from around Central Florida can meet. Many people have told me that they were here for a meeting long before they ever were a member. And I think that that's one of the things that is a gift that has been part of our legacy that I would love to see going forward into the future. So the question is, what do we do with the gift that we have been given of this campus by those people who were brave enough and forward-thinking enough back in the 1940s and 50s and 60s to create this space for us, this building in the 1990s? How do we honor their legacy by making the changes necessary to our campus to go proudly into the future? I think we're doing the right kinds of things, the things we want to be doing. What I keep hearing from you is that you want us to be doing more of them and better. And so as we look to do them more and better, how do we have the infrastructure that will allow us to do that? So I hope sometime before 5 years from now, we'll have a dedication ceremony for whatever that new space might look like. That's the end of the 1U category. So now we move on to the always popular Reverend Kathy category. What are your personal spiritual practices? I would say that most weeks, what I think of as my biggest spiritual practice is actually crafting the service and writing and preparing for the sermon. Whatever the topic is, and they vary, you know, from week to week, I spend a lot of time reading and looking up information and pondering it, and I usually deal with a lot more information than ever makes it into the sanctuary. The internet has not been a friend. There's always one more question to Google. But that allows me to just be in meditation really all week on a topic. So that probably is the biggest thing that I do. But I also meditate. I also journal. And those are two of the other pieces that I use. Oh, yes, I go to yoga every week. Well, most weeks when there's not a conflict. Do you have any daily, weekly spiritual practices that you just can't live without? I don't actually have any that I can't live without. I understand I'm better company if I've exercised recently. And I really start to feel put upon if I don't have time to sit in a coffee shop every now and then. There's something about sitting there. I often write or read there. But there's just something about that environment that I find very comforting. What do you, Reverend Kathy, do for fun? Probably not enough. One of the things I'm going to do this week is start working with a coach provided by our Ministers Association. And I can already tell by filling out the questionnaire that he gave me to fill out before our first meeting that I'm going to be asked about what I do for recreation on a regular basis. But when, you know, just while I'm talking about him, the beginning of the questionnaire, it's a long questionnaire, has all kinds of really, you know, the standard stuff about who you are, a little bit of background, what you want to get out of coaching. And then he says, as part of the coaching experience, we'll be setting expectations so that I can hold you accountable. When you fail to meet those expectations, what excuse will you be giving me? And the really sorry part is I knew already what that excuse would be. And it would be that I am too busy, there was a crisis, there was too much going on. So I think the question of some of this is going to come. But I'll admit, I like to do lots of things for fun. I like to go to the movies. I like to go and explore some of the parks, the natural parks here. I will confess that when I'm really, really stressed out, I go to the theme parks because there's so much stimulation, I can't worry about the things that I'm worrying about. I was once known to go on Harry Potter and the Forest. I can't remember the name of it. But you know that ride? 10 times in a row. I felt much better when I was done. Okay. Next question is, what is your generic overall goal for a sermon? I don't have a good list in my head right now that I could give you, but I probably have several different types of sermons. Some are pondering sermons, some are calls to action, some are more informative, more in the academic category, some are calls to deepen spirituality. There are a lot of different ones. So the goal is going to be a little different depending on what the theme is that week and how it balances with other services of late. But I would say that something that weaves through all my sermons is I want them to be inclusive so that everybody can find something to hold on to. So that if I'm going to be talking about something that maybe isn't your main area of interest, I at least give you some kind of a hook into it. If I'm going to be using a visual metaphor a lot, maybe I'll make a musical connection. Yeah, so this might be like a symphony. Now, I might not come back to the symphony again, but I've given those people who aren't visual in their learning style a place to hook in. I also try to do that theologically, so that if I'm going to be drawing heavily on one tradition, I hope I make space for people who find their meaning in a different space or maybe don't resonate with that to be able to insert their own experiences into it. When I share my stories, I'm hoping it will help you think about your own experiences. So I hope that it's just there's always a broad invitation for people to find the place where they can connect with whatever the message of the day is. Thanks for that question. What does faith mean to you? What place does faith hold in our society today? Faith, I think, is one of those tricky words that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. For me, faith means whatever it is, whatever understanding of the world it is that gets me out of bed in the morning. It's my confidence that the sun will come up, that the world will work, that I can get through whatever is difficult in my life, rise to the next challenge, that it's worth doing something. So for me, that isn't necessarily a belief in a higher power. For some people, it is. I think that faith is can be described in a lot of different ways, but it's the thing that helps you feel both grounded and inspired. And I think in this room we would find that we have lots of different things that we have faith in. I don't believe there are people of no faith by that definition. You know, there are people of no faith by traditional religious understandings. Or if you think faith means belief in a higher power, then certainly we have people in this room that don't have faith by that definition. But I think everybody in the room has something that helps them get through their day. And so I would say that we are all people of faith, people that think it's worth trying and continuing on. I think it's trickier as soon as we move out into the wider world, because when we use that language, it's not clear that other people understand what we're saying. I use some faith language in social advocacy and in interfaith settings because it helps me describe a place of overlap. When it's important, I explain the distinction to people, but it's often not important. So I do, when I write letters to the editor or to Congress or wherever, I've been doing a lot of that lately, I do say as a person of faith, because I think that means something that's important. But again, that's a great question that you could dive further into with Marianne's class. Now we are in the theology category. start with the more personal one. When my mate had a serious illness, he or she would not let our would not tell our children or close friends. I was not allowed to share the news either, but I craved some wisdom and comfort when I was scared. What's a mother to do? What's a mother? Okay. I think it's very hard when we're asked to hold a secret or when we feel that we have a secret that we can't share. And I hope that over time people will develop enough faith and trust in this community that they know they can share pretty much any news that they need to, not necessarily with the whole congregation, because honestly, you don't always want to process everything in front of, with an audience. Sometimes we want a little bit more privacy than that. But we have resources for having people not be alone. Not just being able to talk to me, but our Pastoral Associates Program is a group of volunteers who have been trained and are eager and willing to offer you their listening ear and their companionship when you're going through challenging or desperate times. And so I hope that people will make use of those, and I hope that even if it's just sharing with one or two people, people will find a place to connect, somebody that they can share with, because I do think that that sharing just makes our burdens so much heavier, so much heavier. And I think it's one of the real values of religious community when we have each other. So that would be my dream and my hope for people, is that they would always feel that there's some place here that they can find support. And I would ask in the case of some being given a specific instruction not to share, to ask for permission to talk to at least one person. And I think often that, at least that much can be granted. To your mind, is feminism compatible with Christianity? I attended a liberal Christian seminary, and there were certainly a number of people doing feminist theology at that time. I had a chance to read some of those people. And while I don't consider myself a Christian, I respect the work that people are doing to try to find meaning in that tradition with a feminist lens. And so I don't think they're incompatible. I think that there are challenges, but I think it's really important for us to remember, and we do forget this so often, that Christianity is a huge spectrum of practice and belief, and that we have very conservative voices within the Christian tradition, very orthodox, and then we have some very liberal, even radical voices within the Christian tradition. And I think we have to be careful, because those, for reasons that have something to do, I think, with human nature, We hear the very conservative, orthodox, constraining voices much more than we hear those liberal, reforming, generous voices. And so I think there are things that we can learn from the feminists within the Christian tradition and the liberation theology as well. There are a number of movements within liberal Christianity on the progressive end of Christianity that I think really could speak to a lot of us as Unitarian Universalists. There's two more here. These are related, so these are our last two, so I'll put them out there together. If you don't believe in God and are generally a humanist, how do you address the small nagging doubt about the ultimate creation question? No, actually, I'm going to save that one there. So if you don't believe in God and are generally a humanist, how do you address the small nagging doubt about the ultimate creation question? I think the short answer to that is I don't. something happened 14 billion years ago. We call it the Big Bang, or there's some more poetic names for it too. Most people, even people in religious, in conservative religious traditions, actually acknowledge the Big Bang. That group that thinks the world is only 6,000 years old is actually very, very small. But the question is, so 14 billion years ago this happened, what about the minute before that? And, you know, some religious traditions say, yes, we acknowledge this important event called the Big Bang 14 billion years ago, but we see God's hand helping it unfold or having started it, something like that. I don't know. I think something happened the minute before it. I don't believe there was a beginning to time. I don't think there's an end to space. And I don't worry myself over questions I can't know the answer to. I am fascinated. One of my favorite books, and I put it, it's on the shelf that I consider in my collection of religious books. It's called The Big Bang. It's by Simon Singh. He is someone who makes science readable to the general public. It's a 500-page book on the history of our understanding of the universe. It goes back to the ancient Greeks and talks about not only how the universe unfolded, but how our understanding evolved over time and how each generation was necessary to make its incomplete model so that the next generation could take it a little bit further. And every generation thinks it has found the final answer. And I read that book and I went, oh, that is such a relief, because you know what? I'm going to let go of thinking we have the final answer. I'm sure that some of our models will turn out to be wrong. So I'm not going to get attached to them right now. I mean, people in this room were alive when we still thought the Milky Way galaxy was all that there was. And now we know it's only one of billions of galaxies. So that's fascinating and interesting, but not something that at an existential level really loses me any sleep. So I understand that that is not the case for everyone, so I don't mean to belittle the question. But last question. What about God? What about Jesus? What about Holy Spirit? How do you view the Trinity? I'm a Unitarian. So for those not familiar, a long, long time ago, the year 325, there was a Council of Nicaea. If you've ever recited the Nicene Creed, it is the doctrine of the Trinity that came out of that council. One of the other voices in that council was the Unitarian, what we would call today the Unitarian position, that God is not three persons, that God is God, and Jesus is important, but something else other than God. The Unitarians lost the argument and then became heretics. And we've been proud heretics for almost 2,000 years now. Heretic means to choose, by the way. Heretic means to choose. So what about God? What about Jesus? What about the Holy Spirit? I think there are many understandings of God in the world and in this room. And I find that wonderful and fascinating and would love to hear yours. I think there are many understandings about Jesus in the world and in this room. If I were going to pick the dominant view for Unitarian Universalists, I'd say that he's regarded as one of many great moral teachers. But we have some who can do without him and some who would see him as the Son of God. What about the Holy Spirit? You know, we don't talk much about the Holy Spirit, but I actually think it may be the part of the Trinity with which we might most relate, if you think of it as that animating spirit within us. So I've often, you know, people like threes, so I've often thought about doing a little mapping of of the Christian doctrine of the Trinity into some other ways that Unitarian Universalists might think about it. And this may provoke me to go a little bit further in that mapping. I think it's a fine thing for our Christian brothers and sisters and for those among us who resonate with it. For me, the closest I come to it is understanding that, so here's a little metaphor for you. If God is the sun, then Jesus is warmth and the Holy Spirit is light. So God is something out there, up there, and then there are the ways that what is important makes itself known between us in our relationships as humans. And that for me is what Jesus represents. And then there's that spark of wisdom that we each have inside of ourselves where we know what's true for us. And that would be the warmth. And I would call that the Holy Spirit. So I think that if you go to seminary, in a liberal religious seminary, a liberal Christian seminary, when you're a Unitarian Universalist, and you hang around in Unitarian circles and interfaith circles long enough, you can map anything. And one of my wishes for us as a faith tradition is that we would learn generously. Because I think we have much to learn from the things that have had meaning for other people throughout time. And rather than dismiss it because it doesn't make some sense to our logical mind, I would invite us to say, what does make sense to it? And how might I see this as metaphor or poetry? Or how might I engage it to figure out what I really believe? Because it's very easy to say what we don't believe. It's a great challenge and a great gift to be able to say what we do believe.